Warnings like signs which alert you to sharp bends in the road, a wet floor, high voltage current, obviously are a positive idea because they protect you from injuring yourself. Yet this idea of warning has morphed into a sort of security blanket on college campuses, with the goal being to protect students from ideas or descriptions of actions that they disagree with or are bothered by. My next guest today recently wrote about how what have become known as trigger warnings and safe places have threatened how well college students will be prepared for what we like to think of as the real world. She writes commentary for the Washington Examiner, Ash Scow.
Hi.
And it's WashingtonExaminer.com. Read more of Ash's work and the other journalists there. So give us an example of trigger warnings. What is a trigger warning and what is it supposed to do?
Well, it's supposed to warn students who have had some past trauma in their life that they might be about to read or see or hear something that might trigger that trauma. And it's usually requested by people who didn't have trauma in their life but are believing that they're protecting other people. So one of the famous examples right now is that Ovid's Metamorphosis needs to have a trigger warning on it because it depicts the a rape of Persephone, the Greek goddess. So because somebody somewhere may have been raped, sexually assaulted at some point, you need to warn them ahead of time, and that maybe at that point they don't even want to read it or they want to get out of an assignment for class or whatever, you know, whether they were actually traumatized or not. And what we see happening from this is students actively avoiding things that they find offensive or that might upset them. So to the point that it's helping them, it's actually hurting them, because when I think it was Jonathan Haidt and Greg Lukianoff of Foundation for Individual Rights and Education wrote in The Atlantic in a great article about, behavioral therapy, that if you have a fear of elevators, you don't avoid elevators or buildings that have elevators in them for the rest of your life. That's going to make you paranoid. That's going to make you weak. That's going to make you just a shell of a human being, because you can't possibly do that. You know, if you ever want to go anywhere in life, you're probably going to have to enter a building with an elevator at some point. So rather than people saying, warning, building may contain elevators in case somebody wants to avoid it, no, you look at pictures of elevators. You work on not being afraid of that. Then you step into the building, you look at the elevator from afar, and then you gradually get closer and closer until you can actually be in it and ride it, and you actually confront what you're afraid of in order to get through it. Because what students now is essentially saying, you went through something traumatic, and basically for the rest of your life you should be just hiding under your bed out of fear.
Now, as you said, that's the proper path. If someone has a fear, the trigger warning for something like rape or a violent act or death is playing to someone's sensitivity. So the foundation might have some quasi-legitimate, only because of misunderstanding of a more smarter path to overcome that fear. But at a lot of college campuses, as you wrote, this trigger warning concept has gone in from the quasi-legitimate into the absurd.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not just trigger warnings, because there's also microaggressions, which is the belief that somebody offends you even though they don't intend to. So saying America is the land of opportunity is now considered a microaggression because not everybody in this country has a great opportunity or something like that, you know, or, you know, saying the best person, the best candidate should get the job is a microaggression because somebody somewhere might feel they're the best candidate and they didn't get the job, or I think that has roots in affirmative action as well. And that's apparently, you know, racist to go against affirmative action. So you have things like microaggressions. You also have safe spaces where if there's an idea or a speaker who has ideas or says things that you don't like, you need a safe space. Rather than hearing and engaging and debating those ideas, you need to completely shut yourself off. I believe it was Brown University where someone spoke, and students were so triggered by what this woman had to say, where she was kind of debunking this myth that 1 in 5 women will be sexually assaulted in college. And so they just couldn't stand to hear that, so they created this separate room where they watched videos of puppies and had coloring books and Play-Doh. So, I mean, it's just this complete regression of back to childhood that, somebody offended me. Rather than being an adult and learning to deal with that, I'm going to go act like a baby in preschool.
So I'm going to ask Al from the Washington Examiner, her recent column, What's Next for the College Snowflakes? It was dated July 4th. You can read that and a lot more at WashingtonExaminer.com. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. How much of these trigger warnings and safe spaces are instigated by the, are they instigated more by the teachers or the students?
Well, it's by the students. I mean, there used to be protests and, you know, debate on college campuses. That was really coming from the administrators and the faculty. But we're seeing right now students demanding these things, students demanding to be treated like they're still at home with mommy and daddy, and that administrators need to, in the words of one student I've witnessed at a protest, they need to feel loved at their school by administrators and faculty, apparently. I don't know. But that they want the schools to take the place of mommy and daddy and to protect them from everything in the world that they believe is harmful. And I mean, it's just, it's hurting students, and it they're doing it to themselves.
Makes you wonder, too, as far as college supposed to be in part educating, in part preparing you for the real world. What's, you know, who's more at risk, the students in the real world or the real world that's going to be subjected to these students?
I think it might be a little bit of both, because what happens when these students, these precious little snowflakes, graduate and they get to a job that wants them to work and that upsets them? I mean, are they're going to get fired, and then of course they're going to want to sue and make these ridiculous claims, or they're going to be complaining that there was racism, sexism in the decision to fire them, and it's certainly never their fault, and it's not that they were insubordinate. No, of course not. It has to be because they're a woman, or they're black, or they're Latino. It has to be something like that. And so they're going to see them going to the media, making these arguments, probably a lot of frivolous lawsuits. And, I mean, I'm hoping that employers are stronger than school administrators and say, no, you know what? You're here to work. You're not here to be protected and coddled.
You also write about in your article, What's Next for the College Snowflakes, that the possible root of all this is students see in the past all these students uprising for civil rights and for going against the Vietnam War, and this is their, well, less than stellar attempt to be relevant in a society of protest, I guess, would be the concept.
Well, I mean, that's one theory that I have. I mean, there's multiple different theories, including the insular culture of college, where colleges think that, you know, we're academic and we're so smart and we're the progressive beacon of hope that, you know, we're right, and so we're going to teach everybody what's right, and therefore anybody that's not, doesn't go with us is therefore wrong, and we can chastise them and we don't have to deal with outside pressures. There's also the theory that, you know, it's just this millennial coddled, entitled generation that just believe that they are owed so many things just for being alive and just for being young. But, I mean, my theory is kind of that you've got these students learning from their gender studies and African-American studies professors that the world was so oppressive back then and is trying to convince these students that it has not changed at all. That, you know, you've got these gender studies claiming that women make 77 cents on the dollar to a man because of discrimination, not actually telling people the real reason, which is the decisions that women make. You've got African-American studies professors that are, you know, enforcing these microaggressions and talking about things like that. And so you have these students thinking that every little thing they hear, that they take the wrong way, that's not meant to offend at all, that's not even objectively offensive, but they decide to take it as such, is now racism against them, sexism against them. And so, therefore, America is a racist, sexist country, and they are the right ones. They are fighting back. And that's evidenced by, there was a student at Oberlin who straight up said that the civil rights protesters, they were pretty good, but we have a lot more identities to work with. So basically saying that they're better than civil rights because civil rights was only helping African Americans, and the students of today are helping LGBT students and Latinos and women and African Americans, and it's helping everybody. So somehow they're better despite not actually having to deal with the oppression that we were and racism that we were dealing with in the civil rights era.
There's a look at the next generation, courtesy of what Ash writes about in the Washington Examiner. It was on July 4th. The Dateline, the title, What's Next for the College Snowflakes? We've linked to the article, and maybe you've seen it start to filter through already as summer hires come in. If you manage or own or run a business, What's next for the college snowflakes? You read about that and a lot more great journalism at WashingtonExaminer.com. Ash Gow, thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me on.